The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
And now it's time for the talk of the Northwest, the 9 to noon show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning to you. It's just approaching 4 minutes past nine. It's Friday the 22nd of December 2023 and it's time for the last 9 till noon show of the week. You're very welcome along to the programme. Our Friday panel I'll introduce to you very, very shortly, but just to invite you as well to get involved in the conversation. Share your views, have your say, 086 60 25000, that's the WhatsApp and text number, or give us a call on 074 91 25000. And if you want to email the show, comments at highlandradio.com. and just a daily reminder for you that you can watch the show as well on our YouTube channel, Highland Radio Ireland, on your smart TV, your Fire Stick or any of your mobile devices. And we're on Facebook too at Highland Hub, Highland Radio News and Sports. Okay, let us say good morning to Catherine Noon, lawyer and former Fine Gael senator. Good morning to you. Catherine, great to have you on the programme.
Nice to see you, Greg. Good
again.
Morning.
Yeah, great to have you back. Also, Michael McLaughlin, he's the branch secretary of the Labour Party in Donegal. Good morning to you, Michael.
Morning, Greg. Thanks for having me back.
Good to have you with us. And our third participant, Councillor Kieran Brogan, will be joining us very shortly. But we shall crack on because time waits for no man. Taoiseach Leo Varadkar has said the threat level against politicians has risen in recent times, and what happened outside Leinster House this week was wrong. People might have heard, I'm sure they have, that TDs and their staff and senators as well were unable to leave the grounds of the National Parliament for several hours due to the incident. Cam Corla, Sean O'Farrell, said that a review of security at Leinster House involving Gardaí and senior ACT officials is underway and the matter will be carefully considered. Around 200 protesters, though it's not fully clear what they were protesting, attended. TDs and others were jostled, people held in their cars with young children. I'll start with you, Michael McLaughlin. What's your views on what unfolded there during the week?
I think, firstly, I have to say that I support peaceful protest and the Labour Party do. It's very much a central part of our democracy. But under no circumstances can violence, threatening behaviour or anything like that be tolerated. And what we saw on Wednesday, I think, certainly came into that kind of category. I think the other thing that we as a party and I personally was very concerned about are the 1,000+ people who work in Leinster House. People have a right to go about their work without being threatened. And that doesn't matter whether it's in Leinster House or indeed in the libraries or anything else around the country that we've seen action from this particular group in. But I think, we have to be careful. There are some things that I'm very proud of as an Irishman. And I've had people come to visit who from other countries who are stunned at how accessible our Houses of Parliament are and the fact that our police force are unarmed. And I think, we need to remember and keep those kind of things. And I think it's interesting if we look historically we could call ourselves a troubled nation, and yet we've never really seen this kind of stuff at the Dáil before. And I think, that's quite a move. So in real terms, I think we need to remember to cherish the stuff that we have. Practically looking at the Dáil, I think we need to maybe step up some security on entrances and exits and make sure that is as clear as possible. But, the underlying thing for this, for me, is that we cannot tolerate any forms of violent or threatening behaviour in any way.
Not ironically, but this probably might accelerate plans for, tighter restrictions in terms of protests, maybe Gardaí intervening quicker than they might have in the past, and indeed maybe even an acceleration although there's no need, they're going through in any case, but this is an argument for stronger hate speech laws, for an example. So for the protesters, maybe a lot of what they were doing is counterintuitive.
I think so. You mentioned it in your introduction to this. I'm not quite sure what it was they were protesting about, but I'm certainly not sure that their protest or their activities has done anything to further their cause. And if we go back to this as a democracy, if you want to protest, then there are many ways to do that, protest peacefully. But also, if you really want to protest, there's a great place to do it, and that's at the ballot box.
Catherine Noon, The Gardaí, when I say the Gardaí, Drew Harris has sort of denied to some extent the significance of the far right in a number of comments. He sort of says it's small in nature, it hasn't grown. In fact, I think he said that more recently. But I mean, anyone who's on social media or anyone really who keeps across stuff would know that it is there. It's not huge, but it is significant. And, you know, it's starting to get a bit of traction, which we can talk about a little later on. And I would say too, particularly as a female politician on social media, you would have been acutely aware that an element was growing in Irish society. That, so in other words, what happened this week perhaps would have come less a surprise to you than perhaps maybe Drew Harris.
Yeah, I think when you have such a level of discourse online, it's only a matter of time before it comes into the real world. And I've experienced it both online and in person, perhaps not to the level that the likes of Michael Healy-Ray experienced yesterday. But, you know, I've had people shout at me in public around the time of the Eighth Amendment stuff, and that when I would have been very much in focus and kind of at the centre of that. And it's a frightening thing, you know, because at the end of the day, you're doing your job. And, you know, you were saying you weren't sure what they were protesting about, but I was looking at an article that listed the various things that they were protesting about, which was the COVID-19 vaccines, transgender rights, sex education in schools, proposed hate speech, which is ironic, you know, as you were saying to Michael, you know.
Mass immigration obviously also is a...
Yeah, mass immigration, all those things. So, you know, I don't think they've done much to advance their cause, but it is something that needs to be looked at. And there is a delicate balance to be struck between having the right to protest, which I support, and keeping people safe. And, you know, Michael spoke about other people working in Leinster House, and that's absolutely true. That is just another workplace for a lot of people. But, you know, TDs and senators need to be safe too. You know, like, I know there is a lot of negative public discourse, and it's, you know, it's largely part of what fuels the likes of this, you know, that somehow they're fair game, you know, and I think it's a dangerous, dangerous level of discourse. And I think we've discussed it on your programme before, you know, that it's gone to a level really that is quite hard to understand.
And do you know what?
It is frightening.
It's not a big leap either, Catherine. Now, I'm not saying that anyone that was protesting outside the Dáil would be responsible for seriously injuring or killing an elected representative. I'm not suggesting that.
No.
But people are describing them as the true men and women of Ireland standing up to... So it wouldn't be a huge jump from here, I think, to another person to go, right, well, if that's how we truly progress things, and if we need to go back to the way we were, then I'm going to have to do something big. Do you know what I mean? So we're getting closer to where a serious injury to an elected
Somebody who's in a troubled space, or, you know, that mightn't be that well mentally, or, you know, not even that, just feeling very aggrieved in so many ways. I mean, you just never know what's going to push a person to do something, you know, that ultimately could end in the end of somebody's life. So that's really going back to my point about the level of discourse, even online, being, you know, I've had such like very vile and almost violent things said to me online in the past. And it's not such a huge leap, you know, it really isn't. Mm. It's not such a huge leap from that kind of discourse into the public arena, into it. Although I have to say, a lot of time, people who are that like that on social media wouldn't have the courage to go near somebody in real life as well. You know, that's another side to it.
Councillor Kieran Brogan, good morning to you. Your reflections on the scenes we saw in Dublin during the week?
Yeah, morning Greg, and morning Michael and Catherine. Listen, I think it's been well outlined by Michael and Catherine both, but I think there was one clear message on the protest that was in Dublin a few days ago, and that was whatever the reason was for protesting, that message was lost. Nobody knew why they were protesting, and everybody's entitled to protest. And I think it's something that has worked probably well in this country over many, many years on very genuine issues that could have been around health, that could have been around housing, that could have been around different arguments that people felt that they needed to take to the streets to protest. And I suppose, to be fair to all the politicians of all parties over the years, they would have met many deputations in Leinster House over the years, and the role of a public representative is to shape the policy towards the needs of the people. And many successful bills and legislation would have come before the Dáil and the Senate over the years based on some lobbying from people who wanted a change towards the needs of the people. And I think parties right across the board have always been very open to that. And I think we're very lucky in Ireland that we have public representatives who are very close to the ground and in many areas and are very passionate about their role in politics. I suppose the danger that I see here is the whole area of social media and misinformation that's out there. And I think legitimate media like yourself and Highland Radio, who have, I suppose, an obligation through the broadcasting authority, and we hear a lot of talk around RTE now and their role as a state broadcaster. But I think we need to, as a country, take a closer look at the legitimate media offering that we have, where the information is accurate, true and honest, and where it can be challenged. Because politicians are there to be challenged as well. And if they need to be challenged about some of the legislation or some of the policy that's going through, then that's why you have government and you have opposition. And that has served as well in the past as well. And there's no harm in anyone being challenged on the policy that's written through. It holds them to account. Politicians are there to be held to account. But I think what has happened here in Dublin a few days ago, and indeed, I think it's some people maybe getting carried away with the social media and the cameras and looking at how many likes they have up and stuff like that. But there's so many different things going out on social media now that are inaccurate and untrue. And, you know, I feel sorry for some of the people that follow that and they believe it to be true. Mm-hmm. And I think we all have a duty to hold them to account. You'll note from your years of experience in the newsroom, Greg, that if a press statement comes in from any political party or any group into the newsroom, then you have to look at that to verify it. And sometimes you give the opportunity to go on audio to challenge that person. And I think that's good for the public. But unfortunately, in social media, anybody can put up any post and you get a like and a share and then it starts to share and takes off. Mm-hmm. And before you know it, I've experienced this, that some people in many different campaigns are so far away from the truth on the accurate story that's happening. And I think there's a role there for government to do that. And I think you can focus too much on trying to deny people to be able to protest. I think if we sit down and have a good discussion around what resources we can give to the media to make sure that the information is accurate and true, I think we'll do it'll be a service well done to the people. Because, and to be fair to some of the people, and I've seen it and I've met people at my own constituency clinics, when people come misinformed, and we actually, many politicians over the years had to sit down and listen and then they maybe explain their situation, and you'll find that the person didn't really know the true situation, and we feel that all the time. So I think there's a huge role here for media nationally.
Yeah, there's an example yesterday, someone messaging in saying that, you know, Mohammed was the most popular man's name in new baby's name in Galway, which is not true, but it's been spread around and then it just is repeated as a fact. Though, Michael, the one thing I want to recognise here is that, and I hope that the powers that be understand what's going on, because we have seen it in other countries, most notably in America. The bottom line is there are almost 13,000 people homeless in this country. The local food bank in Letterkenny has had to start rationing the amount of food it can give for people. We've got hundreds of thousands of children in poverty. There is an awful lot of people that feel that things aren't being done for them, right? Now, what will or could certainly happen is that there could be an event in this country, we saw it in America, whereby people, what the individuals are protesting resonates more with the greater proportion of the population. And then there comes a political shift and then things change fundamentally forever. So, you know, at the same time too, the government has to be seen to be addressing the concerns of the general population.
I agree. First of all, just to take a step back, we spent a while talking about social media just then. And I think what we saw on Wednesday was the next step. We're not talking about keyboard warriors in their own isolation or even in a group that can't be identified. We're at the next step. This was in public, in person protest. And you're right, Greg. You know, there was lots of anger around lots of things. I mean, housing came up a lot. There's clearly lots of migration rhetoric. There's lots of all of the stuff that we have seen in the UK and in the US that was very evident on Wednesday. And clearly there are problems. I mean, if we look at the problems that we have in housing or in health, you know, people have a right to be angry. And at the moment, it does look like people's concerns are not being met. That said, where do we draw the line, or what do we do to bring it back? I think absolutely, Kieran, you're right. There's lots to be done about proper messaging and making sure that truth gets out. And there's lots of untruths that are very easy to hang on to. And I mean, we saw the greatest manifestation of that in the US very recently. So we have a right to be concerned about all of that. But still, you know, we come back to the notion that people have a right to protest. And there were some very genuine and real concerns coming through on Wednesday around the area of housing in particular. That said, all of that got lost in the general milieu of what happened.
Yeah, but I mean, if we all take a step back, I think we do. I mean, whilst it wasn't organised, I think we do know what people were protesting there about. But Catherine, you know, like, say, for instance, even the mass immigration one, I think that's the one where by, you know, a lot of people, their views are wobbling, or they're uncertain, or they're having different views. And again, you know, I don't want to be accused of being anti-government, but like, a lot of that, I think, was, and I'm just saying, I'm just a listener listening, was poor communication, not communicating with people, with people being moved into the area, not communicating that we recognise there's pressures on GP and acute hospital services, not recognising that, you know, this is going to impact all of you in terms of schooling, for an example. Do you know what I mean? It was more a case of, well, this is what we have to do, and we're going to have to parachute these people in, and you don't really even need to know where they've come from. And I just think, I understand why that policy was adopted, and it was quite some time ago, but some of these problems have also been created, I would suggest, and that's just a feeling I have.
Yeah, and I think you know, you put your finger on it there, because communication is everything, and, you know, the absence of knowledge and certainty about a situation for people creates anxiety. So, you know, even just talking to somebody, like, I've had it both as a solicitor and a politician, that sometimes the very act of listening and hearing and putting somebody in the picture, that's very helpful to people, to the mindset, you know, that people have. So, you know, I think there has been a very challenging situation, to be fair to the government, with the amount of Ukrainians in particular coming into the country. And it has been a bit frantic, you can imagine, behind the scenes, despite the amount of, you know, resources that have been put in place to help that situation. You know, I think the communication has been far from ideal. And if it had been better, it'd be a lot easier for communities to accept and understand those things. So, while I accept that the communication hasn't been great, I can kind of understand, when you look at the real situation that they're dealing with as a department, it's not straightforward when we have such low amount of housing in the country to actually accommodate our own citizens before, you know, we have an influx of various other nationalities. Mm.
Yeah, okay. Kieran Brogan, I think maybe there's better communication. And I mean, obviously, notwithstanding there's going to be serious certain issues that people are going to say that's not the case, but I think there's better communication at local authority level, better engagement, you know what I mean? And maybe, you know, central government could use the offices of the council and those elected in better ways in a lot of these issues, because people need to be heard, Kieran. That's the biggest mistake this government will make, or any government that for that matter, it doesn't matter who's in power, is actually not listening to the people on these key issues, because that it, you know, opposition will grow, in opposition to all politics, not just whichever government's in power.
Well, the good thing about democracy is that the public representative or your local councillor or TD has to go before the people every 5 years, and that'll measure them on the work they've done to date. And I think that has served us very well. And I think, to be fair to all public representatives that I would know in Donegal, they work very hard. And by and large, they're all sharing the same issues, whether that be housing, health, roads or whatever. It's never a case of someone being against it.
But can I say respectfully, it's not just the voice, I think, that needs to be listened to, I don't know how you do that, is actually the 40-odd percent that won't vote.
I don't think it's 40 now, to be fair.
Well, you know what I mean, 35%, 35%,
whatever. That's not far off it.
You know,
But I think, in fair, around the whole area of immigration, I think there's a balance to be got as well. And I think maybe some people, again, it's managing the message and maybe misinformation going out there. You take it in Letterkenny and in Donegal, for example, there's probably the guts of 50 different nationalities here in this area who are working and making a massive contribution, working in our hospitals, working in the colleges, working on the 5,000 IDA jobs that we have here. A lot of people are coming here from so many different countries, and they're working there and making a vast contribution. So, you know, some people would make the comment to me and others times about the walk down the street and they never met nobody they knew, and it's different. But if you meet somebody maybe from a different country, doesn't mean to say that they're here, they're here from Ukraine or somewhere. They could be here working. And, you know, there was a lot of maybe scaremongering as well at the start about what was going to happen. But to be fair, I've seen no evidence in Donegal of much wrongdoing by anyone. And I think, to be fair, a lot of good work has been done. And we have to remind ourselves of the situation that these people find themselves in as well, coming from here. And, any of them I met are not here by choice, but they're here because of the circumstances that they face and are making a contribution.
Okay.
And this was to change. I have no doubt that some of them will be heading back as quick as they can again. Some of them might stay. But I suppose a lot of what's happening to us in this country at the moment in the health service, and the biggest challenge we have as well, and you're familiar with this issue, is that we never were producing more doctors and nurses from medical college, but we seem to be losing them to Australia and elsewhere in Dubai. I suppose that's something we need to look at as well. So there's many different issues, and I've always advocated over many years that if there was something we need to do to get into the second level colleges and engage more with the young ones to try and take their opinions on board and how we can reshape and reconnect and maybe make it more attractive for them to stay here.
One of the whole things of that whole process that actually concerns me too, in that we are also then taking much needed medical professionals and experience from other countries that themselves find themselves in a shortage and don't have the resources necessarily that we have to replace them. We can talk about that more generally. Catherine or Michael, just finally on that that issue before we take a break, is there anything that either of you wish to add?
Well, I'm just talking about the immigration issue in general. I think that we need to acknowledge that there needs to be a mind shift in this country. We used to be a place that exported people. We left and we are now a destination, and we are a desirable place for people to come to on many levels. And I think that's something that...
But Michael, can I jump in there and just say what someone listening at home is saying before they get their phone out? They're saying that I've just said goodbye to my three eldest children. One's gone to Dubai. Two have gone to Australia because they see no future for themselves here. Yet up the road, you know, three families have just moved into a vacant property from some far-flung part of the world that I don't know. You know, that's the kind of... and then people start going, well, what's going on in this country that my family feel that they have to leave here because there's no prospects for them? Yet, you know, people love to come here and move from other countries. Like, and that's, there's no racism, bigotry or whatever, but people are having to contend with that reality in their minds, you know what I mean? And I think unless that's talked about and addressed, that could go either way.
I agree, but I think just on that, I was adding the other side of that argument that, you know, historically, we were not a country that really was particularly attractive to anybody to come to. And, you know, whilst we as Irish citizens recognise many issues, I mean, I moved to the UK in 2006, and I lived in London for 16, 17 years. That was more to do with my specific career and the fact that I had better opportunities. I was working as an opera singer at the time. There wasn't much need for one in Letterkenny or indeed in Ireland. The job was there for me. So that's a specific circumstance. I realise that that's different to what we're talking about. But I just was making the point that, to coin a line from a song, the airplanes are going both ways now.
Yeah, no,
and there is a desire for, and I talk to lots of people who are in the IT at the moment from many nations, and you know, they are thrilled to come to Letterkenny. They're thrilled to have the educational opportunity, and you know, there is a positive, as Kieran was saying there is a positive economic benefit from that. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we are having a skilled workforce who will plug gaps that we have. You know, I'm not saying that it's a choice for everyone to leave. I'm not saying that everything is peaches and cream here. It's not. But the point that I was making was that Ireland is now a desirable place for people to come to, and we have to recognise that. And what we do with that, it is a matter for further policy and debate.
Yeah, okay. I thought it was kind of interesting, Catherine, very finally, just that, you know, maybe some political outlets or even some elected politicians that kind of had aligned themselves with some of the commentary that maybe kind of fed into what happened on Wednesday, backpedalling from that now. You know what I mean? Maybe they've seen
when they realize the danger of that sort of rhetoric. You know, I mean, I don't think anybody on any side of the house wants to see that, wants to feel unsafe coming to work, or wants to feel, you know, I felt very sorry for Michael Healy-Rae, who isn't a man I would agree with a lot politically, but he, you know, I felt very sorry for him, the way he was treated by people coming in. And, you know, anyone who is supporting a lot of that sort of, like, this was a very small group of people, actually, relative to a lot of these types of protests that have happened. It was like about 200 people. So even by the standards of some of the far right protests that happened around the country, it was quite small. So they probably, now I'm not, you know, not saying that it wasn't serious, it was. But we have to remember what an absolute minority these people
and
are.
And just in
as
addition
well,
to
know,
that, it was heavily flagged for a month across various Twitter.
Exactly,
so X,
you know, and they didn't
channels.
Have much success in getting huge numbers out for themselves. But just to come back to Michael's point about Ireland being an attractive place to come to, and the other side of that argument is that there was a time when in Ireland we had no choice but to leave, and. Like really no choice but to leave. And we, you know, so many people who identify as Irish around the world, you know, found a home elsewhere. And it, you would expect that history and that's in our DNA to make us more welcoming to others who are in circumstances of difficulty around the world, you know. And I mean, that might sound like, as you said, you know, apple pie and ice cream and all the rest, but you know, that's the reality of the situation.
See,
you know,
thing,
these are vulnerable people.
I get that, and there's an underlying thing here that really I think maybe people's attitudes kind of are different if it's from Ukraine or from an African country or a Middle Eastern country.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, and yeah, I'm not saying people are racist, but it seems suspicions can be higher, fear can be higher, and then it sort of throws the, you know, white Irish going to white America or white Scotland or white, you know what I mean? Like, and I hate to bring that into it, but I mean, there's no point pretending that that's not a factor here as well, that people are seeing different
faces. That's a huge dynamic. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, it is.
Okay.
It's hard to know what to do about that, you know.
More communication.
Yeah.
I think more education. I keep saying the same things. I apologise. Okay, if anyone wants to grab a coffee, we've got 4 minutes. Hi, Greg. Government and TDs have only themselves to blame for people turning against them with all the new laws being pushed through, the housing crisis, defective concrete banks, raising fuel costs, RTE, hospital crisis. At this stage, we could write a top-selling book on our TDs, but I don't think anyone is opposed to protest, noisy, boisterous protest, bang drums and chant and what have you. I think it's the... It's the, just the violent element of it during the week that has caught people's attentions. If our politicians were in France, they would know what protests were. Well, France is kind of, some would say, moving towards what feels like a dictatorship over the back of that stuff. Yes, Greg, something is repeated often enough, then it's taken as fact. It's not what happened during the COVID lockdown. Do we not know better now? I'm not really quite sure what that means. Good morning, Greg. Is Councillor Brogan saying the people worried about the open border policies our government have in place and what they did during COVID not important to protest about? Your panel is so out of touch. 70% of people in Ireland want immigration stopped, yet your panel would push it. They are supposed to do the will of the people. Just in relation to that, because there was one, I think it was a News Talk or Virgin Media poll, which polled people, and the question was, I can't remember what the question was, it wasn't very nuanced. It was, are you against open immigration or something along those lines? Catherine, just briefly, I mean, say we did have a debate and it was put to a referendum and the various arguments were articulated. Do you think that the public would vote? How do you think the general population might vote on an issue of whether or not we should limit immigration?
It's a really good question, because it's the type of issue that if a person has a problem with it, they don't tend to voice it, or at least definitely wouldn't voice it publicly. I would say it would be very tight. I think the vast majority of you know, more informed voters would realize that it's something that we should support. But it's like you said about the, you know, the person whose three kids are leaving for Dubai and Australia and America or whatever, and they see a family from maybe, you know, some far reaching country getting a house down the road. That's still hard to stomach, you know, for even a person who's very pro the fairness of it, you know. So I can't really say if I can come down either side on it, because I think it's a really tricky one.
I don't think it'd be a landslide either way.
There will be a vote on something like that. Sorry?
It wouldn't be a landslide either way, I don't think.
I don't think that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I think it'd be quite tight. I think people would be quite mixed and quite divided on it. I think a lot of individuals would be divided on it. Like, I am fully of the view, you know, that we should be supporting. And it's like Kieran said, you know, many of these people are bringing skills into an area and doing work that Irish people kind of don't want to do anymore, you know, so we have that need, you know, at a very kind of basic level. So we need it.
Yeah. And this is what happened with the British, because their Brexit vote, Kieran, to a great extent, was a vote on immigration and you know, and migrants coming into the country. That's effectively what an awful lot of people voted on. But as it turns out, you have international commitments, and also you need people from other countries coming in, and it's very hard to say, well, we'll take a doctor, but we don't want to, you know what I'm on about. So it starts getting very complex when you start having the actual conversation about a yay or a nay, Kieran.
There's no doubt about that, Greg, but I mean, if you— and it's a good question, because if you were to maybe take a look, and if Dubai or Australia was to bring in the same thing, a lot of Irish people would be very disappointed. I speak to many parents on a daily basis, and I'll be asking them how their son or daughter is doing, and they'll say they're having a ball, they're enjoying it. And so, I mean, so many young people, and Michael has alluded to it, and I spent a year in America myself back in the day, and I would almost say it's the best thing I've ever done. It's a lifetime experience for many people, and it's a choice they take to do that. And I think many people have gone away and been very successful and come back again. And many people that's coming to this country are making a huge contribution as well in the whole area of IT and the health service. So the world is a smaller place. Most people will tell you that now. They'll tell you about the Zoom calls now that we have, but they'll tell you then, come back before that, the FaceTime and everything else. And, you know, the grannies and grandas now going to Australia. The world has become a very small place. But I think we have to acknowledge that there's huge opportunity for many young people now. We never had an educated society as good and progressive and getting on so well. And there's so many different opportunities throughout the world for so many people. And nowhere more so than here in Letterkenny and in Donegal. There's lots of good opportunities. And I think we've always been very good to embrace people. And I think that's the strength we'd have as an Irish race. Because, you know, for many years, not that long ago, and we're not that old, Greg, many people from Donegal had to head to Scotland or head to London in the tunnels back in the day and stuff. Yeah. And it wasn't by choice at the time.
No, but you see, this is why I mentioned the cultural
and there's many good family that was reared from them countries as well. So would we like a situation that the English decided to close their gates and say no more Irish? And people had experiences back in the dark days when there were signs up in different places and no Irish need apply.
I know,
we'd all remember too
in the 90s though, when
better educated.
We also remember in the 90s too, when there was a massive population of Eastern Europeans in Donegal. There was a little bit of resistance, but nothing like we see now. And maybe we could sort of see what's happening now versus then, and people could spot the differences. Michael.
Yeah, but I think on that point, Greg, it would be a useful exercise for yourself and Highland, maybe to get some of the representatives on from a lot of the good work that's happening right across the culture services to come on and explain the truth and the accurate information around what is happening.
No, we do that on a regular
basis. It's very easy for somebody to put comments in to yourselves, and you don't know where the comments are coming from, and you're reading it out. And I think it would be good to have more accurate information coming onto the public airwaves so people can explore that.
Listen,
and make up their own mind.
I get exactly what you're saying, Kieran, and I recognise on a regular basis to who might be motivated to text in any radio show versus those that might not be. So you don't always necessarily get a balance in terms of communication. The bottom line is 3% of people contact radio stations, 3%, 4%, I think. That's why we can't sustain phone-in shows like Liveline or what have you, because there's simply not the population, and you end up having to ring people up and ask them to come on. Anyway, Michael, I'm not sure they don't do that. Michael, what was I going to say to you?
It's like Adrian Kennedy, you know, with the pretend trying to really rile it up.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'm getting out. My mother used to be a stooge for a radio station. Live.
No way.
I swear to God. It was like, Gwen.
It's not from the floor. You licked it then.
No, they say, Gwen.
That explains an awful lot.
They say, Gwen, we're talking about smoking. And she goes, it's fine.
now it's my right to smoke.
And then everyone would come on and go, oh, smoking's terrible or whatever it might be. But anyway, that is just pulling the curtain back a little bit there. And thanks, Kieran, for I didn't lick it off the grass comment.
Anyway. I said that.
Catherine said that.
Probably. All right, okay. Well, there was one other thing I wanted to say about that issue, right? We'll come back to it. It was
just to pick up before we move on.
Please do, there, Michael. Yeah.
You mentioned Brexit, albeit fleetingly, and you know, it was certainly something along these lines. And I think we need to be very careful about the implications of decisions of this nature. You know, and there were lots of people in the UK. I was living there at the time, who voted for Brexit, and you know, when the same breath. I got that. Oh, yes, but we always looked after the Irish. You're going to be fine. It's not you we're talking about. And you know, I mean, Catherine, yes, that was a good laugh at the time as well, I must tell you. But, you know, moving that on, you have to look at these decisions and see exactly where it ends. And now, you know, you have the situation in the UK where you have 18-year-olds who are coming out of school, or 21 or 22-year-olds coming out of university, who want to go on their gap year traveling around Europe, and they find that they can only stay for 29 days and they need to come home again. You know, or the people who had moved to Spain and were happy to retire there, only to find that they needed to come home again as well. So these kind of decisions, whilst it's a very valid conversation and people's concerns are very valid, we have to look at the implications of those.
And that's why, it wouldn't be a fait accompli necessarily the outcome of a referendum, because we'd start getting into not a one simple shall we pull up the drawbridge question. It would, we have to, and also too, I really, as we were speaking, and this is the point I was going to make and put it to you, Michael, is that, you know, there's an awful lot of, you know, born and bred first, second generation Irish people of colour that are the sons and daughters of people that moved here 20, 30 years ago, working in our hospitals, working in other areas of society, don't get me wrong, that all of a sudden now kind of wonder, you know, this place that is my home, is it my home? You know, and there's, when these narratives and these conversations are happening, there's people are affected by this as well, that I just always try and be conscious of Michael. It's not all cut and dry.
It's certainly not. And I think that was the point that I was trying to make earlier when I said, you know, that Ireland is now a destination country and people are coming here to build lives. And you are looking at, you know, second, even at this stage, I'm sure third generation people of a non-Irish heritage who are absolutely Irish, and Ireland is their home. And just to move that one on a bit, a personal experience, I had a friend who came to visit, who was born and bred in Scotland, but was of Middle Eastern origin. And we were somewhere and someone continued to push, you know, but where are you from? And regardless of how many times my friend answered that they were from Scotland, that no, you couldn't be from Scotland. Now, we all get the subtext on that. And that's kind of what I mean, that we need to change the way that we're looking at this as a nation. And the psyche needs to change, that, you know, people come to build lives in Ireland, and they come from all places throughout the world, and they make a very positive contribution to Ireland. And we need people to be, you know, all economies thrive on people coming, and we are an aging population as well, as another thing to think about. We do need people to come and work.
But there's a natural curiosity amongst Irish people as well.
Yes, there is that, absolutely.
Yes. And also,
so
too,
always, oh, sorry, God, you've got brown skin, where are you from? You know, it's you know, I'm as curious. I have it in me too, that if I met the three, if we were in a pub now, I'd be wondering, you know, just about where you were from and the normal stuff that we talk about. So there is a bit of that in it as well, you know, to be fair.
I agree, but I think that there's a difference between our natural curiosity and openness and friendliness, which are all traits that are celebrated throughout the world of the Irish people. Mm. But I think we need to find that line of saying, okay, right. No, we need to stop.
You know. But I find myself in taxis wanting to ask where a person is from out of genuine curiosity, you know, because I'm just a curious person about people and I, you know, but I'm afraid to ask that question now, where, you know, it can actually be a harmless question where you're just wondering what their heritage is and you'd like
but
to
talk
about it.
There's still a difference in asking where you're from and then telling you that you couldn't possibly be from.
Oh, no, that's a level.
You are from. You know, and that was the situation.
I get that. And also, too, because sometimes I think we can look back on history with rose-tinted glasses. a lot of Irish had a very, very difficult time in Glasgow and in certain parts of Scotland, and they weren't quite as welcome. They weren't kind as welcome as we sort of maybe reflect on in history. In the same situation in London, and we know with the signs and all that type of stuff too. But also too, if you dig deep into some of the social media to Australia and other parts of the country, there are views, and I'm not saying they're big in number either, that, you know, that say there are people from outside of Australia that are displacing Australians, either in work or in homes as well, because all places, and just because, oh, but we're going over there to work, it doesn't mean there isn't a cohort in these countries that sort of say, well, you know, Australian houses for the Australians and Australian jobs for the Australians. You know what I mean? So, as I say, it's nuanced.
The Brexit thing was interesting as well, Greg. Just going back to that, I wrote down something here that I wanted to mention, but I remember seeing a guy on the telly who had a big berry farm, you know, and he had voted for Brexit and he couldn't get people to work in his farm, high up or low down. And it was a direct consequence of his vote. And it goes back to points that nearly everyone has touched on earlier about just the accuracy of the information that gets out there, you know, and how important it is to have, you know, accurate information about the reality of the situation, where we actually do need a hand with some of these jobs that Irish people don't want to do and Europeans really a lot of the time don't want to do. So I just thought that was really interesting. It's similar to the point about, you know, the people spending time in, like, there are guys that we know who voted for Brexit who spend time in ski resorts, and then they were totally flummoxed that they were only able to spend 3 months there, and that the Irish are much more desirable now as workers in ski resorts than the English for that very reason, because they don't want to go through the hassle of the paperwork and all of that. So proper communication information is just so important. People were sold a pup in the UK.
Well, I think also there were assumptions that, you know, I can make a decision and there will be no consequences for that. And I think,
well,
you know,
here's a perfect example. I was sitting in a bar just when Brexit was being debated, sitting in a table outside a bar in Tenerife. And I was back to back with a people from Britain, from England, and they were resident. And this genuinely did happen. I tweeted about it at the time. They were resident in Tenerife at that time, and they were discussing Brexit. And they go, "I'm voting yes because there's too many bloody foreigners in England." And they were sitting resident in Tenerife, and I'm not sure if they're still resident there and how the laws changed. But that there was the irony was completely lost on the fact, because you see, if you're an English immigrant, you're not an immigrant, you're an expat. You know what I mean? You're the language is, you're an expat. You know, you're not an immigrant. So, you know, language is important.
I had colleagues in the music business at the time who we were singing opera all over Europe, voting to leave. Oh, it won't affect us.
The arrogance of it, really.
It's extraordinary. Absolutely. But all of these decisions, no matter what they are politically or otherwise, any conscious decision that we make has consequence. And, you know, we need to be adult enough to look at the fact, say, okay, we're choosing to do this. As a result of this, that happens. And it doesn't matter what we're talking about.
Okay. I'll tell you what we might do just for the last four minutes. I don't want to sort of go on to a serious issue and then not give us enough time to discuss it. So we might stay with this one. Kieran, I suppose in and around Letterkenny then. I mean, obviously, as you say, the media has a role, and it's a role I take seriously as well. And I know exactly what you're saying in terms of, you know, what role might be there in terms of, you know, us understanding each other better. But do you think outside of the days that happen, you know, and we do see them, that more needs to be done to sort of maybe break down barriers, eliminate any fears that might be there?
I think, in fairness, I'm glad to give the opportunity, Greg. I'm glad you're staying with us. I think we should acknowledge a lot of the good work that has been done. This is not something that maybe to Letterkenny anyway. It's not something new. It's been there for 25 years, I would say. And I think, to be fair to our schools, first of all, they've done great work. And Letterkenny's probably a good example. I mean, I've had a lot of experience over the years in employing people from so many different countries. But I mean, you know, when we hear the comment of somebody of a different colour of skin, Letterkenny is a prime example of many people of a different colour of skin now who are actually born and raised in Letterkenny. They're Letterkenny people now. They're making a great contribution. They're playing a great role in our schools. They're playing a huge role in our local football teams. They are Letterkenny people. they may be of a different colour of skin, but they're our own people now, and they're making a good contribution.
But that's exactly it, Kieran. And if you don't mind me saying, the point I was trying to make, though, is you see, because there is sort of a bit of project fear out there and then some sort of organically felt fear, those people who 3 years ago perhaps no one would look sideways at maybe now are getting glances because people believe they've just been dropped in here. Do you know what I mean? That's the part of the conversation I think that people
A lot of good work is happening there by the different agencies at the moment. I mean, there's different cultures days that take place in Letterkenny. Yep, sure. And you know what? The atmosphere is absolutely brilliant at them. They're great. They're very proud of the culture. So there's an awful lot of good work happening there by the interculture groups there. And you know, we have people within the council who's working very closely in that. And maybe that story and that message needs to get out there more. But I mean, there are people making a huge contribution as well, a lot of these people, to a lot of the employment sectors as well, offering guidance, help and support as well. Mm. The ATU is a perfect example. There's so many different nationalities within the ATU now. It's a university. There's people coming now to the ATU from so many different parts of the world, and they're talking about the education system we have, the degrees we have and everything else. So, you know, there's an awful lot of good things happening, and maybe it would be an opportunity to have a forum of people from the different employment agencies to come along and have a conversation to embrace and to maybe recognise the contribution that these people are making in our town and making it different and better. But I think,
well, getting back to the
school
live,
teachers, I think in fairness to them, they have embraced them. Mm. And, you know, when you go into the different schools, you can see firsthand of the little children. And I think it's good, and I think it's something we should be very proud of, how we have embraced so many different people. Because when they came here first, as I say, it wasn't by choice. This is now their home, and they're very happy there. And, you know, sometimes the negative message only gets out there, but I think there's an awful lot of good things that have happened, and I see them firsthand.
I think there's a lot of positive conversation, to be honest with you. I just think what happens is that people ignore the people's concerns, and then when you do that, I think that's where problems can exist. But listen, I agree with primarily everything you said. Kieran Brogan, thanks very much indeed. I appreciate your time. Michael McLaughlin, always a pleasure, now almost a regular.
Thank you
so very much indeed. Have a lovely weekend. And Catherine Noon, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for your time.
Take care
of yourself. Take care, Catherine. Bye-bye. That's Councillor Kieran Brogan, Fianna Fáil Councillor in the Letterkenny Municipal, Milford Municipal District. Michael McLaughlin, Branch Secretary of the Labour Party in Donegal. And also Catherine Noon, lawyer and former Fine Gael Senator. We are going to get to your comments, I assure you. But first, let's take a break for the news and obituary notices. Then we'll be right back here on Friday's 9 till noon show.